To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. You know, I, I'm just beside myself this morning. I'm just struggling with a lot of things, but I can tell you what's not going to happen on this show. I'm not going to degrade other people to make myself look better. I'm not going to talk about somebody having some kind of diarrhea. I'm not going to try to predict the future, and I'm not hanging out with movie stars to give myself credibility. I am here to help you with your car problems. I'm a master technician. My job is to help you. It's nothing more, nothing less. I'm not thumping my chest. I'm not telling you I'm the only guy in town that can fix cars. In fact, I'm not. I'll just tell you up front, this is a car show. It's not a comedy show. It's not a music show. It's a car show. And it's brought to you by Kurtz Automotive. Kurtz is an independent, family-owned and operated repair facility. I personally know Kurtz. I know him and his wife. I know Jeff. And I don't remember, I always forget his name. Jeff is the service writer, and then the young man who's the technician. I'll think of his name here in just a minute. But they're master techs. And so Kurtz has got a good place, and they're honest. They're dependable. He does domestic and import, both gas and diesel. I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. How you doing over there?
Hal is your first caller. Hal.
I'm doing good. Good. I'm almost done with your honeydew list.
Oh, wow. That's we'll talk about that off air, I'll tell you. Yeah. Hey, well, let's go to Hal. We have an early, early caller. Hal, good morning to you.
Hi, Mark. You've helped me out in the past, but I don't know about this one because I got a tough one here.
Okay.
I bought a Dodge Caravan 2012 about 6 months ago, and the car, I love the car. The car is great, but I have a real fluke going on. Every now and then, the windshield wipers self-activate and go for about anywhere from 2 to 10 cycles, and then it returns to normal. Every time I want to investigate the problem, it doesn't happen. It may not happen for 2 or 3 days.
Okay, Hal.
And then all of a sudden it happens.
All right, Hal, you only have two choices. You get somebody involved in the diagnostic procedure, or you wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Now, technicians know out there that they can disconnect the wiper arm. Your wipers are controlled by your turn signal lever, yes?
Yes.
Okay. So we would disconnect that, and we may take your turn signals away for some short period of time. You could stick your arm out the window and use your hand signals. But we would disconnect that, and if the problem went away, then that's going to be bad. Number two, we'd disconnect the switch at the motor, the wiring at the motor, or maybe we would take the input away from the motor, the wiper motor, from the turn signal switch, and see if the motor runs on its own that way. We'd keep the power in the ground there. But what I want you to do to help self-diagnose this is I want you to kind of be a little rough with the turn signal lever. I want you to firmly pop it down on the left side, you know, downward to turn left, and I want you to firmly pop it up. And I want you, when the wipers start working, I want you to grab the turn signal switch about an inch from the column, 2 inches from the column, and I want you to kind of push it forward and backwards and up and down and see if you can affect that problem, if you can make it happen or make it quit. Because if you can't do any better than what you got right now, like I said, you only got two choices, start replacing parts or wait till it gets worse and easier to find. How many miles has your van got on it?
It's got, a little over 100,000.
Okay. If I had to make a guess, I would guess that the turn signal switch and hence the wiper switch, I would replace that. If there's anything else on that switch that is acting up, sometimes you ask for a left turn signal and it doesn't give it to you. Sometimes you ask for a right signal. Sometimes you ask for the wipers and it doesn't give you. Sometimes you ask for the washers and it doesn't give you. If there's anything weird about that, then
you hit it. You hit the nail on the head. It seems to be like the flashers seem to go also without putting
okay.
them on.
The turn signal's so going without. Okay. Now, at the very beginning of this thing, you said I helped you a lot, but you didn't think I could pull this one off. How did I do so far?
You did terrific.
Okay. Wait, I think you're thumping your chest.
She says, my wife is sitting here next to me, and she says, I think you're just thumping your chest, which you promised you wouldn't do at the beginning. But you know what? I'm as good as the information that comes out of their mouth. I'm as good as the symptoms they give me. I'm as good as we can have a yes and no kind of conversation. What I don't like that Hal didn't do is he didn't tell me what he's done on his vehicle for the last 100,000 miles. We don't start off with, I did this, this, and this, and then we finally get to the symptoms. So congratulations, Hal. You and I are on the same page. It's good to have give and take.
Okay.
And you know what?
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Hal. And if you're going to pipe in, I'm going to turn your mic off, okay? Thumping my chest.
I'm trying to get fired again.
Oh, my wife, Renee, is sitting here next to me. Her job is to make sure that I behave myself. Of course, Andy's got a direct line to you, my daughter. Mm-hmm. So between the two of you, you can decide whether I'm out of control or not.
Yeah.
And that's okay with me. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, now's the time. Let me tell you, if you're a Facebook freaky, then I'd like you to friend me on Facebook because, first of all, I don't post pictures when I go to the bathroom. I don't post pictures when I'm on vacation. I don't do any of that. Everything that surrounds Mark Salem really has to do with cars. Tips on for you on what to do, what not to do. I just made a post the other day that they teased me about that's longer than the Bible. It talks about this gizmo that you plug in underneath your dash. Now, did you know, Renee, this gizmo would help your hair grow longer?
Yeah.
Okay, where it didn't ever before. It will tell you when your air filter's plugged. But no other gizmo in the world can tell you that, but this little $39 thing can. It'll also tell you if you have a power steering problem or a leak. But nothing else in the world. How many scanners do we have at the shop?
Oh, I don't know. A lot.
8 or 10.
Yeah.
Okay. And we have scanners that are proprietary to Mercedes-Benz, Chevrolet, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota. We have those.
Right.
We don't have a single one that'll tell you you have a power steering leak. We don't have a single one that'll tell you your air filter's plugged.
Nope.
This is an opportunity to sell you lots of parts because you're going to plug it in. And then it's going to start guessing about your repair. Now, it starts off with this. It says, mechanics hate this. That's what it starts off with. All mechanics hate this. I don't think that's the truth, and I'll tell you why. I love it. Not too long ago, a year ago, a guy comes in, and he spent like $1,200 chasing a knock sensor problem. He's replaced the knock sensor 5 times. He's used different brands. He's done this and he's done that. And so we do what we always do. We quoted him $75 to $150. We'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. So after spending $1,200, we figure it out. So we decide that we're going to really give him a heck of a good deal to just drive home the point that guessing doesn't work.
Right.
So we fixed it for $25.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
and he, of course, he didn't believe us.
Right.
And I said, no, I guarantee you. I mean, you know, here's the risk, buddy. You pay $25. If we didn't fix it, come and get your $25. Mm-hmm. So, but he says, you know, come on. And so he says, well, I want you to tell me what it is. And I said, you call me in a week. I'll tell you what it was. So he calls me like 7 days to the minute.
Yeah.
What happened? What is it? And I said, we tightened up your power steering bracket. The power steering bracket was rattling on the head because the bolt was loose. The knock sensor, which is downstream and not too far away, was seeing that bam, bam, bam as the engine was knocking. And let me tell you, the knock sensor, you remember how we test a knock sensor?
Do I?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. All right. See, it's simple. You plug your scanner in and you look at the knock sensor.
Okay.
And it's a yes or no sensor, okay? So your motor's running, you're looking at your scanner, and it says no. You take a hammer, and you hit the motor, and it should say yes.
Yeah.
That's it. So if you sit there and hammer, or you can move around the motor. You hit the alternator bracket, you hit the back of the block, you hit the front of the block, you hit the water pump, whatever.
Right.
It should go yes, no, yes,
Here's
no, yes.
Here's a knock. Okay.
Yeah. Well, in his particular case, this thing was yes, 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 yes all the time because this bracket was loose.
Oh, gosh.
So we really should have charged him $75 to fix it.
Yeah.
But I wanted to drive home the point to him that it's probably cheaper to let us help you than it is for you to guess.
Yeah.
The whole thing about this was, is not too long ago, a guy came in and he says, you know, I want you to replace all my oxygen sensors. And we said, we don't do that. Because you had some three-whiskered kid at some auto parts store pull a code and told you that you needed one.
Right.
And if you needed one, you need all four. Now, in most cars, the newer model cars, we have two catalytic converters. And they have an O2 sensor and oxygen sensor on the front of the catalytic converter and behind.
2 minutes.
Right.
They compare the readings of the exhaust, and what they're looking for is a difference. So the fuel coming into the catalytic converter is laden with hydrocarbons or fuel. Mm-hmm. When it comes out, it should not be. So it's looking for the efficiency of it. The idea that if you need one, you should replace all of them is born in one thing, and that's salesmanship, because there's nothing that says that's the truth.
Yeah.
Nothing. So we said to him, we're not going to replace all four of your oxygen sensors. Let's just look at it. So we look at it, and this one oxygen sensor is just stuck on the lean side. So it was always yelling, give me more fuel, give me more fuel, give me more fuel. Well, upstream on this side of the motor, we found a huge vacuum leak. So the vacuum leak was diluting the amount of fuel,
right,
and it was going through the catalytic converter, and the O2 sensor says, where's the fuel? So it's a 1 to 5 number. 5 is, holy mackerel, you're drowning me in gasoline.
1 minute. Right.
And 1 is, hey, where's the gasoline? So tell me, between 1 and 5, where does the oxygen sensor supposed to be?
Oh, 2.5.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Bingo. That's the whole thing.
So he probably didn't even need an oxygen sensor.
He needed
at all
to fix the vacuum leak.
Right.
But the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store told him you
would
need
have
all
sold
four.
Sold them those that, right, are what, $200?
Could be
a piece.
Yeah. They, well, it depends on the quality.
Yeah.
You can buy them for $59, but you can buy them for $159 and everything in between. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to take your call. But if you don't want to, I'm going to tell you about a 93 Corvette that came in that had a real erratic idle. And it was a half-breed car. Half of it was a 93 and half of it was a 94. So clearly somebody had started swapping parts and didn't understand that these parts were important to be year specific. So it had a rough idle. It ran terribly when it was hot. It ran a little better when it's cold, but it wouldn't hold an idle. You always had to throttle, throttle, throttle to get it to just idle and stuff. So the performance on a 1 to 10 scale was a 2.
Mm-hmm.
So it had been sitting for 100 years. The guy, it hadn't been plated in 10. The guy, it was a vendor of ours at one time. I think he did the septic tank up at the ranch.
Yeah.
And anybody who does a septic tank is my hero.
Yeah,
and he did it without using gloves, and he wasn't chewing his fingernails.
Stop it. All right, we'll be right back.
We'll be right back in just a minute. Welcome back, everybody. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me here is my wife, Renee. She's my partner in our car repair business. And she's almost as good about cars as I am.
Not quite.
And nevertheless, if you'd like to call us and ask us a car question, you certainly can. You can throw that out if you want that. Folks, we had a power outage this morning at the ranch, so we had to fire up all the generators for auxiliary power because we were scared to death. Hold on, don't unplug that.
Well, it's not plugged in anything.
Oh, it isn't? Oh, okay.
Other than that.
All right. And so we had auxiliary power all morning long, thinking that we were going to do it, and about a half an hour before the show, the power came back on. So we're kind of still dealing with the auxiliary power problem. But nevertheless, Automatic Transmission Exchange is a great place. He's been on 40th Street in Washington since 1968. He's really good. He's really honest. They know how to fix transmission problems. They know how to diagnose differentials. They know how to diagnose vibrations, all that kind of stuff. So he's been at the same location, 40th Street in Washington. His name is Phil, and he's a good guy at Automatic Transmission Exchange. Let's go to Bruce. Bruce, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Mark. Okay. I got a 93 Class C RV, a 21-footer, on a Chevy 30 chassis with a 454. And I just use it for pulling my boat. I think I've talked to you on the off the air about this a couple of times, but what I found, I try to drive it every 4 to 6 weeks, and it's been sitting for a little while. I got out in it today, and I have a vibration that I didn't have before. I drove it about 20 miles up the 303 and about, 10 miles on some of the back roads. It's almost like sitting on my Harley at about 65, my old 73, and I feel it through the handle or through the steering wheel. Feel it through the seat of my pants, and the mirrors shake.
Okay.
And get blurry.
You just have a bad tire.
It's kind of a fat. What's that?
It just has a bad tire.
Bad tire?
Yeah, a bad tire. Okay. It's got a tread separation. Now, do you have somebody that could follow you in the motorhome? Maybe your wife or a neighbor or something?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, the fun part would be the other way around. You get somebody to drive it on the 303, and you get behind them, and you just watch the two rear tires. Now, maybe you have to get next to them. So you pull up next to them, and you're looking out the passenger window, but you're going to be able to see one of those tires jumping like crazy because it's got an egg on the tread. So instead of having the tire vulcanized from the top to the bottom, we now have a big air pocket in there that's causing them to separate. So if you didn't have it before and you have it now, and it doesn't, and it goes away when you stop, and it gets worse with speed, you clearly have a bad tire.
Okay. Can I ask you another quick question?
You can.
I've got a 1970 Jeep CJ5 that I bought a while back from a friend of mine, and he told me that through some testing he had, he's a diesel mechanic, he told me through some testing he had done, he was pretty sure it had a bad exhaust valve, and I can't remember what head he set it on. So I was trying to get a reference, I can pull the heads and do that stuff, but I don't have a good reference for a machine shop that could do, the valves and the heads. I really don't want to replace the motor. It's a little Buick V6 that's the original motor in it.
Stop for a minute. Stop for a minute. You've gone from the guy that owned is a diesel mechanic and he thinks it has a bad exhaust valve to all the way to I'm looking to have somebody rebuild the motor. I think you've just jumped over a whole bunch of steps, and my fear for you is that you're going to take this apart. Somebody's going to pull it. You're going to take it apart and find a broken valve spring or something else that explains the problem, or in a worst-case scenario, you pull the motor, you have it rebuilt, you put it back in, and you have the same problem. Let's talk about symptoms. There is a specific symptom for a bad intake or exhaust valve. Tell me what your symptom is.
Well, it has a miss that I've heard before, and it won't pass emissions.
Okay, what is it? A CO failure or an HC failure?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, well, you see, that's the important part. If an exhaust valve is bad, there would be an explosion that would come through the exhaust system. Because if being bad means it's not airtight. So if the exhaust valve is hanging open, then as soon as the air and fuel is ignited, then you're going to have a heck of a noise in the exhaust system because that explosion won't be contained. It'll go past the exhaust valve and come out the tailpipe. You didn't say a word about any noise, any backfiring, or nothing. So you got a miss, and so that means either you're running rich, and if you're running rich, because CO affects HC, but HC does not affect CO. CO is unburnt fuel, and hydrocarbons is raw fuel. So you have some difference. So any good technician is going to stick a tailpipe probe in that Jeep. They're going to look to, or your paperwork is going to show it, if it's a CO failure and HC. If it's a CO and an HC, I'm going to work on your carburetor and fix that thing. I'm going to get rid of your miss and make it pass emissions. So my suggestion to you is forget this engine idea. Get somebody to fix the tailpipe emissions, and then let's see where we're at. Because maybe you have one bad plug and you're failing HC. Well, HC failure and one bad spark plug, they go hand in hand. So you got a bad wire, hand in hand to an HC failure. So you got hydrocarbons and carbon monoxide. So you, those are the two, CO and HC. So what part of town do you live in?
I'm on the west side. I'm out on Jackrabbit Trail, close to the 303 and the Interstate I-10.
Thunderbird Auto probably coming in on 88th and Thunderbird or something like that. I don't have my map in front of me, but if you go to marksalem.com and look at mechanical shops, I've got Thunderbird Auto. I know Tom could figure this out for you, but okay. I don't think you have the symptoms. You got a slight miss, and you failed emissions. I think those two are related. I think once we fix the miss, then you'll pass emissions. And I don't think that you have any bad valves because you don't have any symptoms for the bad valves.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you, buddy.
All right. Thank you.
You betcha. 602-508-0962. The lines are wide open, and we have five of them. Gil's running the ship from the pilot's room. We don't have any music to play. We don't have any jokes to tell you. We're here talking about cars. We're here talking about motorhomes, motorcycles, tires, all that kind of stuff. So, again, 602-508-0960. I was going to tell them about the 93-94 half-breed Corvette. It ran really terrible. We couldn't even plug a scanner into it because the assembly line data link, or the data link, DLC, wouldn't talk to our scanner. So it would talk to every other car in the shop, but not his. So we knew that there was a malfunction there. Yeah. You know how Eddie figured it out?
Nope.
It's amazing.
He's
absolutely
MacGyver,
amazing.
I'm telling you.
He is.
Yeah.
He put a timing light on it, and the timing light intermittently flashed. He traced it back to the distributor. He put a distributor in it. It's an optical distributor. It has a light, and that interrupts the light and makes it fire. It fixed the idle, it fixed the starting, it fixed the performance, it fixed every single thing on the car.
Wow.
Every single thing. But he sold it as a guest because the distributor's $800 and the whole front end of the engine has to come off to get to the distributor.
Yeah.
So he says, I'm 75% sure, but you have to understand, you're paying for a guess. And
yeah.
The guy says, I'm willing to go. 602-508-0960, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting here next to me is my wife, Renee, and we're here at your service helping you with your car repair problems. And just keep in mind, people will sometimes email me, and you go through my email first. They'll say that what I said to them actually fixed their car. Folks, it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with dialogue between us. So it's just like Sid at the very beginning, Hal at the beginning of the show. Mm-hmm. Hal talked about his turns or his wipers flapping intermittently. But then when we narrowed it down, then he said, oh, there is a relationship between my turn signal lever and the wipers flapping. Mm-hmm. Well, the turn signal lever's bad. So then we just replace it. He saved himself $75, $100 by just narrowing it down to the switch.
Right.
So he goes in. He doesn't diagnose it to them. He says, intermittently the wipers flap. And it seems that if I mess with the turn signal lever, it stops or it goes away. But sometimes I can wiggle it and make it happen.
Right.
Ooh, baby, where are we at then?
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get to what real quick. Let me tell you about S&S Tire. S&S Tire is in the West Valley. They have three locations, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have S&S Tire has the most comprehensive tires in their warehouse. So you can stop by and you can say, can I have a price out the door for good, better, best? I want all season, all terrain. I want a highway tire. They'll talk to you. They'll explain the difference and how you can tell, besides price, on a good, better, best tire. So they've got all that. Plus, they do everything related to tires, from wheelbarrow tires to tractors. They'll balance your tires. They'll do alignment and suspension work. So they focus on what they're really good at. Again, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear, S&S Tire Auto Service. Let's go to the phone. Sig, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning there, young man. It's good to talk to you, Mark.
Thank you.
I'm a first time caller. You and your family are doing a wonderful, wonderful service as far as keeping this radio program on, because it is needed, let me tell you. So keep up the good work, okay?
Thank you very much for that. Thank you.
This concerns our good old, we've got a PT Cruiser, okay? Chrysler PT Cruiser. It's a pretty good car. But, you know, this one has 78,000 miles on it. It's a year 2006. Okay, and we're having overheat problems with it, intermittent overheat. So let me give you the disposition of what we've had done to it before.
No.
We've taken
no.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Here's the deal. I don't care what you've had done to it before, because it hasn't worked. So I need to ask you some questions. Let me ask you this.
Oh, please. Yes.
Okay. When you say overheat, where is the needle on the gauge? Is it half, three quarters, or in the red?
It's not in the red. It's not three quarters. It's above the, you know, those Chrysler PT Cruises, the heat gauge is about center when it's nominal.
Yes.
It creeps up about, maybe an eighth of an inch to maybe a quarter of an inch.
Okay, so it's halfway between the half and the three quarter.
Yeah, like the other day it did that. Okay. And I just to let you know, I replaced the electric fan with the two relays, the shroud and everything was replaced. And I got out of the car before I shut the engine off, and I went around to the front to listen if the fans were running, and they were running. They were running.
Okay, so, well, it's not the fans.
Right, obviously. It's not the fans.
All right,
go ahead.
So just for everybody else, how much money you spent?
Oh, gee, at this point, it's got to be at least $400 or $500, maybe $600
okay.
total. Because they replaced the thermostat, and they replaced the... the antifreeze, and they replace the oil.
Okay.
Okay. So
I'm gonna tell you something you're not gonna like.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. Tell me something I won't like.
2 minutes.
All right. It's absolutely normal for that car, and it's demanding of that car, and it's designed for that car to run between the half mark and the three quarter mark. As a matter of fact, when you get to the three-quarter mark or thereabouts, the fans will kick on, and then they'll kick off the closer it gets to half. The fans have about a 15 to 20-degree range to them, which between the on and offs. If you look in your owner's manual, I'll bet you $100 it tells you exactly what I'm telling you. And that's it.
Okay.
Runs between half and three-quarters. The fans, if you would have called me first, the fans have something to do with low-speed driving, city driving, air conditioning on. Here's what fans do. My car gets really close to the red around the city, but when I get on the highway, it's perfect. Well, either the radiator's plugged up or the fans aren't working, because that's the difference between 35 miles an hour and 75 miles an hour. So when you look at the big picture, the fans have specific symptoms at specific times. City driving, we need those fans to cycle on and off. Highway driving, we're going so fast that the air's running across the radiator, and we don't need the fans. Stick your hand out the window and, you know, with your palm out, and your hand goes all the way to the back window. We got more than enough air running over that radiator.
You have ram air.
Yeah, ram air. That's a good point. So if you're fighting a... I promise you, half to three quarters is absolutely normal. Now, it'll get up above three quarters sometimes, but you'll know why. So, it's the middle of summer, it's July, it's 106 degrees outside, and you're in stop and go traffic, okay? All right, now it gets to three quarters and it goes over maybe two needle widths over three quarters. So all of a sudden, traffic kind of breaks loose, and you get to go 30, 35, 45 miles an hour, and you see that needle come down fast. You say, okay, there's a relationship to why I saw it above three quarters. But how rapidly it goes down is the real key on how good your system is. So I want you to just drive it around, and if it's between half and three quarters, I want you to put a business card over that gauge, and you'll be fine.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So,
well, if I may interject here, I agree with all that. I think you're a professional. Thank you for that. But I just wanted to interject that over the years that we've had this car,
okay,
it has really never, even the summers past, that gauge has stayed right at the center, even in summers past.
I can answer that.
Go ahead.
When they changed the thermostat, did they tell you what the old one they took out?
No, sir.
Okay.
I never saw it.
It's stamped. Here's what I got to take a break, but stay right here, okay? Because I'm going to tell you why that's happened. Okay, I'm Mark Salem. Chris and you and Matt, stay there, because I'll get to you right after the break. And then we got a long segment there, and I'll get to you right real quick. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem sitting here with Renee, my wife, and we're answering your car questions, but we have three in line, and I promised I might get to them real quick. Sig, are you there, buddy?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here. Thank you.
Let me explain just a little history. Way back in the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s to about the mid-80s, we had a 160 or 180 thermostat in the motors. And during that period of time... every motor at 50, 60,000 miles was filled with a black soft ice cream, a black, tarry, yucky substance. The sludge was unbelievable. So in 1981, right, when we started talking about electronic carburetors and we started talking about evaporative systems and emissions stuff, one of the things that they did is they went from 160 to 180, they went to a 195 thermostat. Now, we usually run 10 over the 195. So here's the hard question, Sig. When does water boil?
212.
Good. Good, good, good. I asked that to a bunch of ASU students the other day.
I'm an engineer. I should know.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. Fair enough. I'm going to leave the engineer.
My father was a mechanic, too.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And so we know that what was happening in the older cars is that the water, every time you'd shut the water off, we would evaporate and condense the moisture in the air, and you'd get a tablespoon of water every time you went through a cold cycle. Then when you warm up, the motor would never get hot enough to evaporate that and let the PCV, it takes the water, turns it to a gas because it steams the water. The PCV valve sucks it out and sends it out the tailpipe. So in the mid 80s, we start going to a 195 thermostat, and what they wanted to do is they wanted to run the motors at 220 because they knew 220 was over 212, and we don't. Now today, you can take a 100,000-mile motor, and I'll eat breakfast out of the oil pan. I'm telling you, it's that much difference. So I think what's happened to yours, and actually my wife during the break, and doing the radio show off the air, like in the breaks, I have this rule that we don't do the show before the show, so I'll take care of her later. But she looked at me, and she goes, he had a 160 or 180 thermostat in it, didn't he? And I said to her, I'm not going to give you that credit because I already had that in my head. So, but anyway, that's what I believe is going on with your car. I think you're going to like it a lot. Exactly. You'll get better fuel economy with your engine up about 220. And I think your middle is going to be 185, 190. So 220 is halfway between half and three quarter. So you should be fine. You should be fine. All righty. Thanks, Sig. Thank you very much for that conversation. Chris, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi.
I'm
not one of your more professional listeners. I'm calling in for my son, and he has a Japanese V6 motor, and when you first start it up, it rattles for about 5 seconds. I can definitely hear a knock, and then it goes away. And if you turn the car off and immediately restart it, there's no knock. But if you turn it off and wait 30 seconds, there's a little knock for about 5 seconds. And it's like a hydraulic lifter. You tell me.
All right. I want you to call it, it's either clicking or clattering, because there's a big difference in my head between clicking, clattering, and knocking. And so,
okay,
that's what I wanted to hear. Here's the deal. It could be something as silly as an exhaust leak. Because when you lose the exhaust gasket, it goes tick, 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 and even the most educated ear cannot tell the difference between a lifter ticking and an exhaust leak. Except if you take about 3 feet of heater hose, maybe half-inch heater hose. You stick one of the ends in your ear, and you start it up, and you wave that across the manifold real quick. You'll hear the exhaust leak. Now, another way he can determine if it's an exhaust leak is once it warms up, when he starts it, once it warms up, then there is no clicking throughout the day. Let's pretend he's an Uber driver, and he's driving it all over town. He says it only does it first thing in the morning. It never does it after that unless the car sits for a long period of time. Well, as the motor gets hot, it expands and it takes out that exhaust leak. As far as anything else is concerned, I don't think, in the absence of anything else, I don't think I would chase this right now, because it could be just bleed off, which is we leave a little oil in the oil system, and it could be actually, it could be he's using the wrong filter, the oil filter, and it's allowing all that oil to drain back into the filter. But let me put your mind at ease here. If I dip a screwdriver in a quart of oil and hang it by its handle, how many days or months or years goes by before you can reach up there, squeeze it with your thumb and index, and just run right down the screwdriver and not find any oil?
don't know if you ever will have any.
Forever. It'll be
oil
there.
Come off.
That's exactly right. So when he shuts it off, everything's bathed in oil. And when he starts it up, and let's pretend he's got a little lifter clatter, that indicates low oil pressure. It goes away rather quickly. That means, boom, we got oil pressure. So I'm saying to you, I doubt very seriously if we're causing any damage. I doubt very seriously if we fixed it, you would say it wasn't worth it. I spent too much money to get rid of this little clatter. He can't afford to let it get worse. But the biggest question I would say to him is as you use the car for hours and hours, does the noise ever go away, or is it every time you restart the car, no matter whether the motor's hot or cold, you get the clatter? And then just have him verified that the oil filter by application is exactly what he should have, and that's all I'd do.
Well, we just changed the oil, and I guess they would replace the filter, and it has the exact same thing. It clicks for a few seconds after you turn it off for at least a minute. It'll click for about three or four seconds, and then it will stop. And it doesn't matter if the engine is warm or cold; it does it first. But if you immediately restart it, there is no clicking.
Okay. Well, again, I can't say anything about your oil change place, but it's not uncommon for the guy to look at the filter, look at the interchange, and just put his filter on there. So he sells Quaker State, and you have a Champ. So he goes to the book, and he says, this is a Champ 123. What is it, a Quaker State? It's a 29. So he puts a 29 on there. That's not by application. I'm suggesting that you go in there and you describe the car down to the 8th and 10th digit of the VIN, and somebody looks it up that's got gray hair, and he's got hair coming out of his nose and his ears, and he's been around the block a couple of times. The three-whiskered kid isn't going to know what the heck you're talking about, but there's a drain back valve in the oil filter, so it doesn't let the oil come back in through the filter and into the oil pan. So it slams shut when you shut the motor off. I don't know if your car has one, but I would suggest that would be 20 minutes of time and maybe another oil change down the road to determine if that's your problem. Anyway, thanks very much, Chris. We got to move on. Matt, thank you for holding as long as you did. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark. I have a 96 Dodge Ram 1500 that intermittently going down the highway acts like it's dropping from fourth into third for an instant and goes right back. I mean, it's a hard slam, and then it just stops.
Okay. What part of town are you in?
Maryvale, West Valley.
Okay. I want you to call. First of all, I'm going to send you to a place that doesn't do retail work. Okay?
Okay.
He may want you to go through a shop that's one of his places, and certainly I'm down in Tempe, but I certainly have a relationship with him. His name is Alger, and the transmission shop he owns is A&S, and it's easy to remember because it's automatic and standards. But it could be Alger and Shelley, because Alger's wife's name is Shelley, or we have a couple of other acronyms that we accuse him of, but he won't admit it. So he will be able to diagnose this over the phone because Mark Salem can't do it. He's fixed this before. The question he may say to you is I don't do retail work. I want that car to come through this way. So a shop sends it to him. He fixes it. Usually the shop marks it up $50 to $60 to $70 because they got to take it and pick it back up. There's a little bit of a warranty chain there, because the shop's going to be in the food line if there's a warranty issue. And so that's the reason why the wholesalers want to insulate themselves from the retailers. So, and then they find dealing with shops is a lot better, a lot quicker, a lot more efficient than dealing with people on the retail side. I'm not faulting them, and I'm not sticking up for them, because they're all big boys and they can make their own decision. I have a wholesaler down in the East Valley that I use, and he's of the same opinion. And I got to tell you, the two best transmission guys I've ever met in my life own those two shops. So I've got Lorenzo down in Tempe, and I've got Alger up at Deer Valley in I-17, and those guys are the biggest wizards. I sent a Dodge truck to Alger not too long ago through my company. Alger found a bad connection at the back of the fuse panel, and it had to do with the power in the ground circuit. So he bypassed it, and the problem went away. Then he took the fuse panel apart, resoldered two connections, the problem was gone away, and he sent it out. And this vehicle had been to I don't know how many shops, and every one of them wanted to rebuild it. The problem is the rebuild wouldn't have fixed the fuse panel problem. So somebody would have paid for a $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 rebuild and got the same problem. So call Alger, talk to him, tell him Mark Salem said that there's a good chance that he'll, you don't know what this is, but he told me to give it a try anyway.
Wave the red flag.
Yeah, it's called waving the red flag at the bull. So you just tell him.
Okay, well, that Deer Valley and I-17 is right where I work. So.
Okay. He's a good guy, and he, like I said, he may want you to go through Kurtz, which is down on Bell, and you can kind of work it out between all of you guys. You drop the car off at Alger's, he bills Kurtz, and Kurtz collects the sales tax, by the way, too, because the Alger's not going to charge Kurtz sales tax because it's a retail or a wholesale transaction. They just want to insulate themselves from, because if it comes back and there's a little problem, then Kurtz will typically take care of it and not bother Alger for it. So anyway, thank you very much, Matt. Thank you for holding as long as you did. There's another good guy up on I-17 and up in the north part of I-17, and that's Tom at Action Auto Repair. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley on the northwest corner. Tom's been around since 1983, and actually I've known Tom personally since 1979. Whatever your repair needs are, whether it's import or diesel or gas or whether it's domestic or whether it's one of those weird, really weird cars, Tom's a good guy to run your problem by. He's smart enough to know when he's overmatched by the car, but he's also smart enough to know that he's probably going to be able to diagnose and, with your permission, fix the particular problem. So again, Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, and he has ASE Master Certified Technicians working there as well. Okay, what do you think?
Not much.
602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Gil is running the airplane. He's the pilot. Renee and I are sitting in the coach section. That's enjoying right. The day. Mm-hmm. So we've been in the radio business since 1988.
Yes, we have mostly.
Yeah,
yes,
and we probably answered a couple million questions.
Yes,
quite a few. But like I said before, I'm only as good as the information you give me, and it's a kind of a give and a take. So you tell me what you got going, and we talk about symptoms. And I ask you questions about does this happen? You'll notice, like I with a clicking noise in the first, I want you to start it up cold, start it up hot. Is the clicking noise go away? It's an exhaust gasket, and you don't need to worry about this because of this. And that's kind of the trade-off. So I've been an ASE Master Technician for a very, very long time. As a matter of fact, you have to recertify every 5 years, and I just passed the threshold where I don't have to recertify anymore. So now I'm called an ASE Master Technician Emeritus.
Oh, you.
Like, the problem is I got to look up emeritus because I don't know what it means.
Yeah, exactly, or how to spell it.
No, I don't know how to spell it, but I did look it up. It means retired.
Right.
Yeah, it means retired. Mm-hmm. So I'm not retired. We still have a shop, and our kids run the shop. But the only place in town that I don't have a shop is down in Southwest Tempe, and that's the reason why is because our shop is there. So if you're anywhere in the West Tempe, then Mark Salem's shop would be a good place. Everywhere else, you go to MarkSalem.com. We'll be back right after this.
To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. I need to adjust this right here, and I did.
Cool.
So thank you very much. All righty, we're here for another hour. We're talking about car repair. We've got Dennis on the phone. We're going to get to him in about 15 seconds. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. And real quick, if you're on Facebook a lot, you might want to go to Mark Salem. And you'd like, if you're interested in talking about cars, that's what we do. We don't talk about politics. We don't talk about our wives. We don't talk about gardening. We don't talk about nothing. We talk about cars. And so people ask questions. I post the answers, and I tell stories about some of the stuff that happens that I see and stuff like that. So it's really kind of an educational give and take. And so just look for Mark Salem, and obviously I'm in Tempe, Arizona. So there's another Mark Salem that's, I think, a mind reader.
Psychic.
He's a
yes.
psychic.
Yeah.
And see, I'm actually a psychic as well, but there can't be yeah. two Mark Salems that
you
are
wish
psychics.
You were psychic.
yeah. All right. This portion of Violent Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Let me tell you a quick story. Thompson's does some air conditioning work on a guy's car. The guy calls me, and he's not necessarily happy, but he's a little confused. So I ask Brian for all the work orders, and he sends them to me. And then he calls me, and he says, tell me what's going on. And I told him. He says, I'd like to talk to this gentleman first. So he calls me back, and he goes, everything is fine. I said, no, well, tell me why everything's fine. He goes, he just didn't understand that he only paid for one repair and two parts, but it was over three tickets, and that we didn't duplicate any charges. We only put Freon in it once. We only charged them for evacuate and recharge once. We only did this once, but we never duplicated the issue. So
right.
he didn't understand that, and Brian with the work orders told him that. So everything's fine.
Yeah.
But Thompson's Auto Repairs, like all the rest of my shops, they are going to take care of their customers. And Thompson's been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma own and operate Thompson's. It's the only shop in Mesa that's on my list, and they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley. You just couldn't find a nicer, more common sense couple
yeah.
than Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair. Dennis, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, first time caller, Mark.
Thank you.
Mark, I've got an 05 Wrangler, which I developed a leak out of the bell housing. Now, presumably from years of messing with mechanics, I had either a front transmission or a rear main. I took it to a little shop close to that I've taken my vehicle just, a few years for minor repairs and stuff, and he thought it was a valve cover. He took the valve cover, gassed it out, changed it, it still leaked. So then he said, well, it's the rear main. So he put a split rear main in it from the oil pan. Okay? Now, I've never heard of that myself, but he said that's a common practice. It still leaked. I brought it back again. He took the pan off and put another one in, and it's still leaking. Is there something I don't know behind that motor that might leak other than the rear main?
Well, that's his problem, not mine and yours. He's already got all of your money. He's clearly been guessing like crazy. So why would that be your problem? First of all, you didn't even tell me what color you saw the oil dripping, and you said it could be the front seal of the transmission or it could be the rear main seal. But in fact, the color of what's on your driveway is going to tell us which one it is. Red is transmission, and unless you got a stick shift on it, and then you would smell it because there's a smell associated with gear oil versus engine oil. I'm not suggesting you get on the ground and smell the oil. I'm suggesting you wipe it with a Kleenex and just put it up to your nose. But here's the problem. This is not a tough thing to do. Is your Wrangler four-wheel drive?
Yes, it is. Yeah, okay. All the Wranglers are four-wheel, yeah.
Okay. So it's really his. Is it a straight six?
Yes, it is a straight six.
Okay. So the back of the valve cover, he's right. And if there's leak in there, you always start at the top leak because everything moves south from there. So if there was a leak, then you fix that first, and there should be a dramatic difference between that. That means you got it. They could be the head gasket at the back of the block, and I think there might be a cam square on the back of the head. I think.
Okay.
And then you got the rear main seal, and he can't do both sides of the rear main seal by just pulling the bottom by the oil pan. He has to get to the top as well, or he slides the seal over the back of the crankshaft. So it sounds like to me, and I've been wrong before, that he's only doing the bottom half of the main seal. And I'm not quite sure how he's doing it otherwise. Now, if the main seal is a two-piece half moon, I've heard of other technicians say that they'll drive the top one out and drive the old one in, and that's not something I allow my techs to do. If we're going to do the rear main seal, we're going to pull the transmission out of it, we're going to access the back of that crankshaft, and we're going to do it right. And so that way it doesn't leak. So that those are the issues you're faced with.
That's what I've always done in my own mechanic, but this was a new technology to me. I checked the parts were available. He said, fine. He said, that's what I'll do. So, okay. Thank you.
Right.
It's just leaking and it is engine. it's engine oil and transmission. It's not transmission oil at all. I know the difference in them. And it's leaking bad enough so I can get, you know, I put my hand under at any given time and get a little answer.
Yeah. Well, so, if it's blown up on the back bumper of the Jeep, then you know it's a bad oil leak because it wouldn't be blowing up on the back bumper or the back window. So anyway, good luck to you, Dennis. Thank you very much for calling. 602-508-0960. Gil, anybody in queue?
We have open lines.
Okay, we've got open lines, Gil tells me.
And that just reminds me, yesterday we had one of your friends brought in his diesel truck and, you know, he said he had an oil leak and so they put it up on the rack and looked at it and it was actually coolant mixed with, you know, the mud or
right.
the dirt and it made it look like oil, but it was an actual coolant leak. So,
yeah. See, you don't tell hairy chested guys with diesels that they're wrong about what they got leaking.
Well, he was surprised, I think. So, but I don't know why they wouldn't have put dye in that Jeep too. I mean,
I didn't have enough time to cover that, but you're right. The idea is you clean it up the best you can.
Right.
And then you put a dye in the oil. And the dye will, under the right light, it turns orange or green or red or yellow, whatever.
Right.
And then you get your black light out and you just follow the leak to where it's at.
Yeah.
And it's a little difficult at times. You have to use a mirror. Mm-hmm. It's a little difficult at times. Sometimes you got to put a fender covers over the hood to kind of darken it up. But yes, dye would have been one of the things.
Right.
But the problem is we got two people working on this Jeep. We got a former mechanic, a mm-hmm. guy who used to work on his, and then you got the shop. And when that happens, they're not going to have the same story. So the shop's saying he's running the show, and he's saying, no, I'm not. I'm giving him, you know, what I think.
Right.
So you have those
Yeah.
I want to tell you, and I'm glad you brought that up about the guy, the hairy-chested guy with the diesel, who's a friend of mine.
Yeah. I'm not going to say who it is.
Will you tell me on the break?
Yeah.
The other day, a guy came in, and Andy, our daughter, works the front counter. Folks, Andy's been with us for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
She knows more about cars than most other women will ever know. And here's what Andy gets to do. She gets to actually read every work order. And in our shop, the procedure is that we are to describe and write down and document exactly what the customer says. Exactly. We're not letting the customer tell us what to do. We want the symptoms. Now, we have the symptoms in writing. We have the diagnosis process in writing. We have the estimate in writing. Then there's a verification that the symptoms are gone. So there's four steps. Andy gets to read all that.
Mm-hmm.
So she's sitting at the front counter. Guy comes in. Obviously, he doesn't want to talk to a woman, but she's there. He says, I want you to do my front brakes. And she says, tell me why. Which is the question everybody has to ask.
Right.
Why? Why? Mm-hmm. What? Because they'll say, well, I got a vibration in the seat of my pants. Okay, well, it's not the front brakes.
Right.
So he says, well, I need them. She says, well, how do you know that you need them? I just need them. And you can tell that he's not happy that he's talking
to
a woman.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Yeah. So it happens to you, too.
Right.
So Alan, our son, who's, I don't know, 6'2", 6'4", he's a big boy. He was kind of over-listening.
Mm-hmm.
So the conversation then turns, and the guy turns his attention to Alan. So Alan steps next to his sister. Now, he doesn't know that they're brother and sister.
Right.
He doesn't know that Alan runs the shop and Andy runs him. He doesn't know that. So they get to him, and finally they get this answer from him. Well, it's only got 7/30 seconds of pad left.
Yeah.
And Andy goes, my daughter says, that's perfectly acceptable. And he goes, it is not. And she said, well, I don't know why you say that, but we tell people when they're down to 2/30 seconds or 3/30 seconds is when you need to have your brakes done. But we're not going to, if we find your brakes are at 7/30 seconds, we don't care what you want. We're not going to change your brakes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what happened after that. I don't know if Andy.
Well, I think Andy told him that. And then a little while later, he was still, you know, wanting to talk to somebody else because he didn't believe her.
Right.
And so Alan walked up at that point and he asked him the same question, you know, when do you replace brakes? And Alan said 2 or 3 30 seconds. And Andy goes, that's exactly what I had told him, but he didn't want to listen
but
to
I
me.
But I think they actually racked it at the end of the day.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know if
and
there
then
was
they looked
time.
At it, and they determined, yes, somebody had told him 7:30 seconds, but if they told him 7:30 seconds and he needed brakes, that was a lie.
Exactly.
That's a lie.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that she asked why.
2 minutes.
Because it's, we would have planned on doing a brake job. We would have ordered everything. Then we get it up in the air and we get it apart and it doesn't need brakes. And so now the technician's wasted a lot of his time.
Yeah.
And it's all because the service writer didn't ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
So as folks, as you can imagine, working for me is, they call me the tyrant.
No.
And I have a specific way I want everybody to work. And it all has to do with protecting the customer.
Well, yeah. And, you know, like I had a lady come in the other day and, you know, a chain in the valley had told her, you know, your air conditioning's going to go out and your belt's going to fall off and you're going to be stranded. Well, she had a, you know, handicapped husband, so freaked her out, $3,000. And we come in and look at it. The air conditioning was fine. The belt was fine. But, you know, they scare these people, and it's so frustrating to watch all the time. So somebody had told him, obviously, that he needed pads.
Right, at 7:30 seconds.
Yeah.
Maybe they wrote it on the work order, but somebody else told him. When now, there's a disconnect between the technician and the service writer.
Sure.
So the technician tells him he's got 7:30 seconds, and he writes it. But the service writer turns around and says, I'll tell you where else we see that all the time. And we're not... You know, and I know, that there's oftentimes two shops will look at the same problem, and
sure,
they'll have different, but they won't be that different.
Right.
They won't be, the air conditioning needs to be replaced and the belt needs to be replaced. They won't be that different.
Right.
Okay. The other thing was, is we see a lot of times where people come in and dictate the repair. That's
sure,
the hardest part right there. Just tell us what the symptoms are, because the guy next door has diagnosed it, or my diesel buddy mechanic has diagnosed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out it's over the phone. And then you say, well, can we just verify the symptom? Can we say something? Last but not least, you'll remember the guy with the Q45 who had a vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So he diagnosed it himself as the drive shaft. He took it to a drive shaft place and they did something. He still had the vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So he took it to another drive shaft place and they did something. He still had the vibration. So he calls me and I said, tell me the story. He tells me, and I said, well, did anything change on the two drive shaft repairs? He goes, no. And I said, well, then it ain't the drive shaft.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
yeah,
if two guys have messed it, because even if they did know what they were doing, they would have made it better or worse. That's all
changed
there is to it. They would have changed it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I challenge him. I says, if you'll bring it by, I'll diagnose it for you. I felt sorry for him. So he brings it by. They get it up in the air, and the right rear wheel's wobbling like a drunk's knees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just wobbling so bad. Then he says that him and the neighbor had replaced the bearing in the right rear. And so when you put the assembly, the hub assembly, in your press, you press the old bearing out, you press the new bearing in. But if you don't put it in there right, you're going to bend the hub.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have enough spine to relay that to him. But clearly somebody, maybe the well-meaning neighbor, maybe the well-meaning owner, but somebody screwed that hub up. Or somebody hit a curb real hard with the right rear and screwed it up. But if you say to a man that somebody hit a curb, what's the first thing out of his mouth?
It must have been his wife.
Exactly. That's exactly. It's either the wife or the kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, it doesn't make any difference if the concrete from the curb is still embedded in the wheel. And this happened in the last 24 hours. It wasn't his fault.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we identified the problem. We guaranteed him that if he wanted to replace that hub, that would fix his vibration. And we guaranteed him that the drive shaft wasn't it. I was prepared to do this. I was going to take some wheel weights. And I was going to use big hose clamps, and I was going to put them on the drive shaft. And I was going to make it worse. So I said, I'll do that, and I'll show you I can make it worse. And that means the drive shaft's fine. So we actually drove it. And I think Eddie drove it, and Alan was behind him. And they drove it a block.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw that their right rear wheel's wobbling like, you know.
Right.
And so they go back, they put it up in the air, and now they can see it really well.
Yeah.
So it was the test drive was a good thing because two guys went and drove it.
Yeah.
And one guy's looking and the other guy's driving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really easy to do.
Yep.
All right, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Larry Harkers is at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and I'll tell you why he's special. First of all, Bob is the lead technician. He runs the shop. Ellen, his wife, runs the front counter. Larry Harkers has been in business since 1967. Bob is one of those guys that you can look him in the eye and say to him, nobody in this town, maybe in this state, can fix it. And that's like waving a red flag in front of a bull. He'll take your keys, he'll give you an estimate, and he will fix your car.
He's probably one of the best diagnosticians I ever met in all my life. He is perfect. And by the way, it's Eric and Jeff at Kurtz. I couldn't remember their names.
Oh, there you go. Boy, it only took you an hour and a half.
I know. Very funny. So anyway, Larry Harker's is a good place, and a good place if you live near 38th Avenue Indian School, or if you've got a problem that nobody else can fix. Real quick before we go, Renee told me the name of the guy with the diesel truck that came in.
Mm-hmm.
He said it was an oil leak.
Right.
He called me first.
Okay.
And he said, I've got this really bad oil leak. And I said, where is it? He goes, at the back of the engine. I thought he was taking it to the dealer.
Okay.
And I said to him, make sure that you go in, that you square up this. Number one, don't fix anything until you call me with an estimate. And number two, what's your checkout fee?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he ends up at our shop.
Right.
Okay. So he's got a bad oil leak at the back of his diesel engine.
Uh-huh. That's what he said.
And
yeah.
What'd you find?
Well, and they got it up on the rack, and Alan goes, it's the seal outside of the turbo,
right,
or something, and it's coolant that's leaking and kind of mixing with the mud, and it looks like oil, but
okay,
it's not oil.
It's coolant.
So, yeah, it's okay, coolant. He goes, we've seen 100 of these, and we do them all the time. So
so he leaves the truck with us, and
right,
Monday we're going to fix it.
Yes.
Oh, I am going to tease him about that.
Why?
Because, first of all, he told me he was taking it to the dealer.
Okay.
And then he drives 93 miles to have us look at it.
I don't know.
That's a lot of pressure.
You.
I don't like that.
I know.
All righty, Vicki, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Oh, first of all, I want to express my appreciation for your referral to 25th Street Automotive.
Oh, he's a good guy.
I had a mechanic I adored. Unfortunately, I got a different job, and he wasn't on my way home. And, oh, that is the most professional shop I have ever dealt with. And David Hoffman, one of their master mechanics, is just incredible. But that's not why I called.
Okay.
But I wanted to thank you again. I have a one-owner 1997 Cherokee that ever since it was new, we've used 100% full synthetic oil in it.
Okay.
The minute that Castrol came out with Edge, I started using Castrol Edge all the time. According to the owner's manual system, W30, that's what I've been using. It has 240,000 miles on it. Everything works like new except for the cassette player died. And I was wondering, should I just keep running? It's not burning or using any oil or leaking any oil that I know of. And I was wondering if I should stay with that, that weight oil, 10W30.
There is no reason to change it. I would only tell you to change it to a slightly thicker viscosity if you were saying that there was blue smoke coming out of the tailpipe, or I'm fouling spark plugs, or I'm leaking a lot of oil. I would say at that point, we then boost the viscosity, so instead of a 10-30, we'd go to a 30 weight, or maybe we'd go to a 10-40. But we would adjust appropriately. First of all, you can go from synthetic to regular and back and forth, and the motor doesn't have a brain, and it doesn't know that. And I want to tell you about my credentials. I am an automotive engine oil expert. I've been trained by Valvoline, so I know what I'm talking about. But in your particular case, in the absence of blue smoke, oil leaking like crazy, and you going through a quart of oil every half a tank of gas, and you said it doesn't use any oil, then I say, take that guy to the dance. You know what I mean? He got you there. So you don't switch mules in the middle of the stream. And this is, you just stay with what you're doing, because what you're doing is working.
Thank you so much. I have a coworker who says, when are you going to get a new Jeep? And I said, when you pry my cold, dead fingers off the keys to this one.
You know what, though? Let me decipher that, okay? Let me decipher that for you. What he's really saying, and this is one man to a woman, okay? Don't tell anybody this.
Okay.
He's saying, I want to buy your Jeep.
Yeah, probably.
And he's saying, I want to be first in line, and I want to buy your Jeep, and I'm going to continue to ask whenever you're selling it. And then he's going to say, well, what do you think you're going to want for that? And whatever you say is not going to be him. You're going to say, well, I want $2,200, want $2,500, I want $3,000.
Okay.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. And he'll come back and counter you. And I promise you that will happen. So I just want to decipher man talk for you, okay? All righty. Good luck, Vicki.
Thank you. But again, my cold, dead fingers.
Okay. You should have told him that. Thank you very
much. I did.
Okay. All right. He's got the message. Joe, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hello, Mr. Salem. Got a question regarding extended warranties. Last year in September, I bought a 2014 Cadillac XTS, and it had less than 4,000 miles on it, 3,979 miles or so, and it's now got about 8,500 miles on it, but apparently the warranty is about to run out in August, and I was just wondering, I've had some people say, don't do it, it's not worth it, and I look at all the electronics on this car. Most of it I've got to get on YouTube to figure out how to, how to make things work on it there.
Yeah.
Figure if that stuff breaks, it's going to probably cost an arm and a leg.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
All right. We're up against a minute to the end of the hours, but I'm going to hang on to you. You've called the right person, but I'm glad there's a break because I need to calm down because this is a subject that's dear to my heart. I'm a shop owner, so I have a different perspective altogether, and I can tell you one thing. We don't go to YouTube and fix cars, okay? People that go to YouTube are looking at somebody else's guess. So you got some clown who pretends like he's an auto mechanic, and he tells you how to fix your car. If the guy was really a good tech, he'd be working for me for $75,000 to $100,000 a year. He wouldn't be playing on YouTube, and he certainly wouldn't play on YouTube for free. When you have to pay for that kind of service, that's a good guy. So we'll talk about aftermarket warranties. You stay right there. The lines are open, 602-508-0960. John, you're right after that. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here talking about cars. You're always welcome to visit with us. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Air Park Auto Service. Nadine owns and operates Air Park Auto Service, and she's been in business since 1985. Her and her husband started in 85, and Stacy passed away a couple years ago, but she's still there. It's family-owned and operated and has been since 1985. They've been on my best car repair shop list for years and years, and if you live in the North Scottsdale area, from actually McCormick Ranch all the way to Carefree, from 56th Street all the way to Fountain Hills, that's the only shop in that area that carries my recommendation that you should visit them. And if you're a lady, you should especially like this, the fact that a lady owns this operation. Let's go back to Joe. He was asking about an extended warranty on a car for 8,500 miles. Joe, for whatever they're doing, I'll give you the same deal. So we'll use their contract and I'll take the money and I'll provide everything that they said they would provide. But here's the bad side of that. From a repair shop point of view, those people, in my mind, my personal opinion, are the scummiest people in the whole wide world. They are people, they don't tell you that they're not going to pay sales tax, environmental charges, and environmental charges, sales tax, and shop supplies. They aren't going to tell you that. Then they're going to tell you that they don't tell you that I can't put my part on there. They're going to ship me a part. So now your car is going to be out of service an extra day or two. The box they ship me has a cheap China part. And they want me to install it in your car. And then they're going to tell me, what's your part warranty? And I'm going to tell them, you can take your part warranty and put it where the sun doesn't shine because I didn't make a dime on that part. And I'll install it. But I am not going to make a dime, so therefore there is no Mark Salem warranty. There is an ABCU warranty. And then they want to negotiate my labor, and then they want me to cut corners, and it's just one
thing after another.
It's just ding is a nice word. I was trying to find something on my vocabulary that didn't get me in real big trouble.
Yeah.
I hate those people. It is constant battles. The other day they said, "Well, you got the car diagnosed." I said, "Yeah, the rack and pinion, it's about $1,600." He says, "Well, we'll call you back." And they said, "Well, we'll give you 12." And I said, "I'm not taking 12." He says, "Well, we'll send you the rack." I said, "I'm not taking your rack."
Yeah.
And they said, why don't you give me your price? Well, $1,200. Okay, well, and I look at it, and it's part and labor. And I said, well, you're giving me the part. He goes, yeah, it's $1,600, and we're taking the part out. Now it's $1,200. I said, but it's just $1,200. What about shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax? Well, the customer has to pay that. Well, you need to tell them that. And then there's no warranty on your part because Salem ain't going to give you a warranty because, you see, if the part costs me $15 and I charge you $22.50, that profit in the part helps pay for the warranty. That's what it is. That's what it's there for. So if I don't make any money on the part, I'm not warrantying it.
Right.
This has been going on since 1979. I have ever dealt with an aftermarket warranty company that I've got along with. Every single one of them wants to screw me and you.
Every single one of them wants to send cheap parts. Every single one of them doesn't care that they're taking your car out of service for 3 days, when if they'd have just let me fix it, it would have been one day. Every single one of them is the small print. Oh boy, are my panties
wadded up.
Okay,
all right. I think the best thing to do is just take your money and probably put it in a savings account and leave it there. And then when you need a repair, then you've got the money there that you would have paid for the warranty.
You stole my thunder.
Okay, well, okay. I'm just I'm letting you calm down.
I've heard that suggestion.
Yeah. Hey, no, that's the truth.
That's what we would do.
You put your money. I'm going to tell you something. If I provided that insurance to you, would you give me $300 a month?
Probably not.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. $300 a month is $3,600 a year.
Yeah.
You know what? Mm-hmm. I can do your transmission after 1 year. I can do your air conditioning system for a third of that.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is that car is worth at least $300 a month to drive. And
right.
You're probably payments less than that.
Yeah.
So when you look at how much it's going to cost you, whatever their payment is, put it in the bank. And I guarantee you at the end of the day that you'll have money. And I'm going to tell you something. You remember the Bounder motorhome we bought in 1990?
Right.
We had a water pump go back.
Mm-hmm.
They voided my warranty at 18,000 miles because I didn't have a flush. I couldn't show flushes. That's the second part of them. Is the other day, 6 months ago, this lady had a radiator that went bad, and they wanted her transmission service records. And we said, what is the relationship between transmission fluid and filter in the radiator? And he says, well, the coolant goes, or the transmission fluid goes through the radiator. I said, hey,
1 minute,
buddy, the tank is bad. It has nothing to do. It's the opposite tank from the transmission cooler. It's a plastic radiator with an aluminum center. The tank is broken. Period. End of story. Well, without a transmission service warranty, we're not going to cover this because our policy dictates on section 14, blah, blah, blah. And the next thing he heard was a dial tone. And he didn't hear what I really had to say because I hung up before I said it. And then I went into my office where my psychiatrist is at every day.
Yeah.
And I'm unloading on her. And then I feel a lot better. Really and truly, skip it. And 8,500 miles.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. If you put in money, you know, every time you were going to buy one of those warranties, you would have plenty of money to fix your car when this stuff starts going bad. But you've got a long time, I think, before anything's going to go bad.
And I'll bet you don't have anything more than $1,500, maybe $2,000, between now and 100,000 miles. Between now and 100,000 miles, you're going to spend maybe $2,000 on an air conditioning system or a bad wheel bearing or a bad alternator or a heater core or something like that. But not maintenance, because they're not going to cover maintenance.
Right.
I'm talking about repairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I got to move on. Thank you very much, Joe.
Got to take a break right now.
I know. I'm going to take a break and just take a breath.
I don't know. You're getting a little wound up here.
I'm
afraid you're going to miss it.
They hit my hot button.
No kidding.
It's almost as if you're telling people to call in because this is what wads up my underwear.
Okay, well, you're just here to help.
I'm not proud of my industry.
Yeah, I know.
And can you make me another appointment?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, folks, we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem, Renee, my wife, sitting here next to me. Sometimes she's my psychiatric person. She helps me understand why I'm crazy about my industry. And I say things that I'm not supposed to say, but you know what? When I say things I'm not supposed to say, I own them, don't I?
You have no filter.
That's right. That's right. IMM Auto Services in the northeast quadrant of Tempe. They've been in business since 1972. Here's what's great about IMM. No matter what you've got in your garage, they can take care of it. The rest of us can't say that, and here's why. The rest of us hide from Volvos, Saabs, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos. Renee just said that just not too long ago, somebody had a 72 Fiat.
Oh, no. This was a 71 Volkswagen, and he wanted to put, like, electronic ignition on it or something like that. And I said, we wouldn't be the place, but let me tell you who is.
Exactly.
And send them over to IMM.
That's exactly what we do the best. Our industry doesn't do well. Mm-hmm. We should refer to people who do better than us. But if you've got a Volvo, a Saab, a Fiat, or an Alfa Romeo, and you've got a Toyota, a Honda, a Chevy, a Ford, a Chrysler, they can handle all of that. So IMM Auto Service, been around since 72. And again, they're south of the 202, just west of the 101. Hey, John, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. I've got a 03 Honda Accord EX 4-banger that is, for some reason, having a hard time starting. So when it first happened about 3 months ago, I checked the battery and took it into Costco, and they just replaced it with another one. So I went ahead and put that in there.
Okay, hold on just
a minute.
Wait a minute. We're doing what we don't want to do. I have to ask you some questions. When you hit the key, does it crank over and not start, or when you hit the key, the starter doesn't work?
The starter works when I turn over the key, but the battery is not able to support the fuel going into it to get it started. It'll just like...
Okay, so it's a crank, no start.
It's I know, but he doesn't know that the battery's not... Okay, so it's a crank, no start. So it's cranking over, and it's doing fine cranking over, but it doesn't catch. Okay, well that's...
Right, so as it starts to crank and it doesn't catch, the battery basically stops, or something stops, and the car doesn't turn over and start. So what I've been doing is get in the car, turn on the key, let it sit for like 30 seconds, get gas in there, and then turn it over, and sometimes that helps.
One has nothing to do with the other. Okay? The fuel delivery has nothing to do with the starter. And you keep leading me in different directions, and I want to recenter you to the crank no start. What I hear you saying is it cranks over, it goes rrr, 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 rrr. Is that right?
That is correct.
It's the starter. If they looked at the battery and the battery held 9.6 volts, and if the CCA was 500, then it has to be a starter, it has to be a bad battery connection. It sure as heck has nothing to do with the fuel system. You can pull the fuse on the fuel pump and it's still going to do it. You could put a voltmeter on that battery, and what's going on here is when you first start cranking it, you probably have 11.8 to 12.5 volts. After a few minutes of cranking, or after a few seconds of cranking, I'll bet you the voltage drops below 9.6. And when it drops below 9.6, that means the battery voltage is no longer sufficient to activate a 12-volt starter. A fully charged battery is 13 volts. You can check that first thing in the morning. You can leave your meter on the battery, have your wife help you, crank it over until it stops cranking, and I'll bet the battery voltage goes to 9.6. If it does go to 9.6 and drops below that, then either they didn't check your battery right, you have dirty battery cables, or the starter shorted out. But again, it has nothing to do with the fuel system. Okay?
Oh, great. Well, that's a relief.
All righty. Well, good luck to you, John. Thank you very much. Mark, you're up next. How can I help you? Hi, Mark. Go ahead. Hello, Mark.
Should be there.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like he's
Mark,
fading
if you're on
in
Blue,
and out.
On your, if you're on Bluetooth or something like that, you probably take it off.
No.
Because okay. We're not getting... Okay, well, go ahead and tell us what you got.
Okay. Yeah, a Ford Freestyle, 2005 with 115,000 miles on it. My daughter says that they tell her she needs a transmission. I went with her a few times for a ride, and it doesn't seem like there's any problem with the transmission. She had it serviced, all serviced, and she, a couple of days later, she had a clunk, clink, and then that's it, no more.
Okay.
And now it's... I'm wondering if you ever ran something like that.
Well, I think if the shop is a reputable shop, then probably what happened is when they did the service, they found a piece of a snap ring, or they found some brass bushing, or they found pieces of the transmission in the oil pan. And when you look at that, you know the end is near. So they probably said, you need a transmission because we found two snap rings and we found a whole bunch of brass and we found some thrust washers, pieces of thrust washers, and we found a big pile of aluminum indicates that this band is eaten into the hub. So all of that tells us that your transmission is NFL, not for long. So now she's into that area where it's now not for long. I would suggest that she drive it to another transmission shop. And I would stay away from the chain stores, because the chain stores have now decided that they don't want to be transmission experts anymore. They want to do brake jobs, which are very lucrative, and they want to do all this other stuff. But in reality, these technicians have no skills in diagnostic and starting and electrical systems and all that. They're transmission guys. So and what part of town do you live in?
Dobson and Baseline.
Okay, Dobson and Baseline?
Yeah, that'd be close to you.
Okay.
I
would go up to Thompson's Auto Repair.
Yeah.
And Thompson's at Stapley in Maine, and I would have them drive
right.
it, and I would have them if the transmission is truly bad, they're not going to rebuild it because we don't cross over either, and he will suggest to you somebody that he likes.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, well, she just went in for an oil change. They didn't even do anything down underneath.
An oil change.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
Then I don't know what they saw. If they didn't pull the pan off the transmission and service the transmission, then I don't
right.
know what they saw. But if
right.
she said it went in there and shifted fine and now it doesn't, then the answer will answer everything. So once somebody diagnoses it and once somebody looks at it, they can determine whether or not that transmission died of old age or whether it died because somebody did something to it. That'll be because once you find out what it is, then the answer to your question is obvious. So if you find out that
yeah.
deep within the transmission this band broke, then there's no way that guy that was changing your oil could have gone inside the transmission and broke this band. And especially if
she
sat in the waiting room while they did the oil change and they didn't test drive it or anything like that.
Yeah. So the thing is, we have gone, she's been using it for a few days now, and she says, well, she'll just drive it until it dies, but it hasn't died. And we were just wondering if, you know, 115,000 miles was worn out on a Ford.
I can answer that question. It's important to put 115,000 miles into perspective. That car has been around the equator four times. Okay. Now think about it. It didn't just do four times without shutting off and going through the gears. So it didn't stay in fourth gear for 115,000 miles. It's been in and out of every gear virtually every 5 minutes of its life. So it's uh-huh. true that newer model cars are going 150 to 200. That's true. But this car
right.
is 12 years old.
But he said you right. said it was dying.
No, it wasn't dying. It shifts right. It's a smooth ride, the whole thing. We went like for a 15-20 minute ride, and she's just concerned. She doesn't want to get stuck in the freeway or whatever with it. And she just was concerned about it because all of a sudden it drives good.
What's it doing? What are the symptoms that you think it's a bad transmission?
Well, they told him he needed a transmission. Right now, he doesn't have
right.
any symptoms. Right now, it's working fine. Well, if it's working fine, I tell her to keep driving it. No one has a crystal ball to tell her that this is going to fail next Thursday at noon. But I can tell you this much.
Right.
90% of the time when the transmission fails, the driver ignores all the symptoms of the transmission crying and saying, I'm about to fail, you idiot, get me to a shop. And they have the radio up loud, and they don't know it's not going into high gear, and they don't know it's chattering like crazy when it's in overdrive, so they ignore the symptoms. Just tell her. Pay attention to the shift pattern. It goes inch, inch, inch. That's smooth. And when she's coming to a stop, it'll downshift. And when it's in first gear, when she takes off, it'll be in first gear. The shifting up and down will tell her when that transmission is going to heaven. That's what it is. So
okay.
tell her, I had 115,000 miles. If I drove that car for a week and it was fine, I'd put my grandkids in it with your credit card and I'd take them to Disneyland.
Right.
If you
okay,
let me.
Okay, well, now she's interested in selling it. How would she sell it?
Just on Craigslist.
Telling
or
them about
like that.
The bad transmission?
No, she doesn't have any evidence that it has a bad transmission.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
All righty. Well, good luck to you, buddy. Good luck. All righty. A Ford with 115,000 miles.
Yeah, I'd say get a second opinion, too, if she feels like something's wrong, but it doesn't sound like they have any symptoms.
Well,
yeah.
and symptoms is an important thing. Somebody called the other day and said, Mark. And I said, depends on who you want.
Yeah.
If you're mad, you need to talk to somebody else because I'm in a bad mood today. And I thought, too, you know what I'd do? I'm going to change subjects on you real quick. We're talking about symptoms. If there was a psychiatrist out there that wanted to trade for car repairs and come and visit my office once a week,
I might
do that.
I'd do that for you. Okay, we got another caller.
Okay,
what's
wait a minute.
His name?
Symptoms.
David?
Okay, hold on, David. They went into a shop.
Yeah.
And the shop told them that they needed a fuel injection flush for $189.
Right.
Okay. They called me and they said, what do you think? And I said, well, you need to say to them, what symptoms do I have that you're going to fix with $190?
Right.
And they didn't. They said, no, it's just maintenance. I said, well, it doesn't appear in your owner's manual, so ask him that.
Right.
And he goes, I'm leaving.
So he brings it to us because it ends up that it has an engine miss. So they spent $189, or they wanted to spend $180, but they also diagnosed it as an engine miss. So they bring it to us, and we figured out that there's two possible injectors. So we had number five that was the acting up. So we moved number five to number six and six to number five.
Right.
Guess what?
It changed.
It
I know,
moved,
I
it
know
followed,
this truck.
It followed the injector. Yeah. So we put a new injector in it. Boom, it's done.
Right.
Well, we charged him less money to diagnose it and put the injector in it than they charged him for spark plugs and boots and all this other stuff. We fixed the miss. They didn't. So he went back to the other shop, and they threw him out. They said, we're not going to give you all your money back. And he said, you're supposed to fix the miss. And you didn't. I left with the miss. And here's a bill that they fixed it. And I've driven 2 weeks already, and it's fixed. Mm-hmm. But you spent all this money of mine guessing. And so they said, no. So who's the caller we're supposed to talk
David,
to? David, good morning to you. How are you?
Got about 1 minute.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. We only have about a minute, so be quick.
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Okay. I'm a first-time Ram purchaser. We just bought a new Ram pickup a couple weeks ago, and I don't know much about the Ram truck, so what are the good, bads, and uglies about
Is it gas or diesel?
It's gas.
Okay. Well, let me just tell you. I'm not going to have enough. First of all, I can't think of anything bad. Okay? I can't think of anything bad, but I think it's important for you to know I drive a Ram, and my son drives a Ram. I've been a Chevrolet guy all my life. In 2012, he converted me to Ram because, number one, his would outrun my Chevy, and that really made me mad. All right? He could outpull me, he could outrun me, and he got better fuel economy than I did. So I bought a Ram in 2012, and my whole task of my life was to beat him up the hill with both of us hauling horse trailers.
1 minute.
And I actually made it, okay? I actually whooped him good. But I own a Ram. Stay on top of your maintenance based on what the owner's manual says, and do not let anybody talk you into some wallet flush that doesn't appear on your owner's manual. Or they say, you need a power steering flush. Come out here into the shop. Look at your brown power steering fluid, and here's brand new cherry red power steering fluid. So I think we need to flush this. Do you have any power steering issues? No, I don't. Okay, well, all I want to do is flush it, and it's $80. Well, he showed you what he was looking at. But if he takes you out there and says, well, I don't have any fluid to show you, then he's BSing you. Mark@MarkSalem.com is my email address. You're welcome to ask me a question. Give me your phone number so I can call you. Mark@MarkSalem.com. And like I said, but I call from a blocked line for obvious reasons. So if you send me an email and an hour later I call from a blocked line, then you can answer it. See you next Saturday right here, 10 to noon.